Good day, everyone. Welcome back to the QSIA podcast series. Thank you for joining us again. As promised in the first of these, when we've had a discussion with Ethan Hughes about the implications of the Great Sandy Marine Park draft zoning plan that's now been made public, and we're about 1 week in to a consultation process that is ludicrously short in that we have to have our submissions in by, I think it's Sunday the 23rd of October. I will be speaking with a whole range of commercial fishing people from the catch sector to post-harvest and beyond. And one of the key issues in these discussions will be to try and set some of the record straight and potentially build a new understanding amongst our politicians around the review of the park, that some of what's in the consultation regulatory impact statement or consultation RIS isn't probably worth the paper that it's written on. And my guest this evening, I'm recording this on Tuesday evening with a very good friend of mine, someone I've known since I've been in this industry for almost 15 years and has had her eye on what's been happening amongst a number of key people in my association and others. Can I welcome to this podcast Margaret Stevenson? How are you, Margaret?
I'm well, thanks, Eric.
Margaret, I appreciate your time on a Tuesday evening. I know you could be doing 100 million different things and talk about what is, I know, a stress-inducing topic, but you understand some of the nuances that potentially the public and even in parts of industry haven't quite grappled with. This zoning plan is a net-free zone by another name, and if we want to get more into the definition of that, it's a what we call in industry a resource reallocation for the public. That's basically giving access to the fishing resource to one group in one group over another without, in this case, any kind of justification. So, Margaret, over to you.
Yes, I certainly see it as a resource reallocation under another name, Eric. Back a few years ago, the Great Sandy Marine Park plan was supposed to have been revised, and we were waiting for it to come out several years ago, but nothing happened. But at the same time, we had net-free zones imposed up north, and then we were launched straight into the fisheries reform. And we were just not hearing anything about this Great Sandy Marine Park, you know, plan review. And I mean, they went through the consultation process, presumably, you know, we contributed to that, but there was no outcome. And we've been wondering why. Well, evidently, once we saw this document, it seems very clear that they were sitting on their hands waiting for the outcome of the reform process. And I believe that there was a couple of things that they were looking for under the fisheries reform. Commercial fishing fraternity were promised that any further resource reallocations were to be done with the benefiting sector to have to compensate the commercial fishers if they were kicked out. And it seems very much to us that this document is just that. It's a resource reallocation. I mean, the minister herself said that it was for tourism and for recreational fishing. And then as a third thing, she just tagged on, you know, for or threatened species, and gave no evidence of any, you know, need for this extra protection for threatened species other than what they've already had. But in any case, we also tend to believe, going by the way the maps have been planned, it looks very much like they've been waiting on our VMS data to be able to get the areas that they wanted to close, which are our most productive areas. And that, if that's the case, which we believe it has been, they've given that information out to another department without our knowledge and without our express permission. And one of the things, when one of the issues that we had when getting the VMS imposed upon us was, you know, who was going to have access to that information, because that's obviously that, industry and confidence information. By the very fact that they've designed the yellow zones around our VMS data, that giving out all our fishing areas to another sector without our knowledge and our permission.
I think in this context, you're exactly right. The ability to zone the way that they have could only have been done to the spatial degree if they had VMS data.
The perspective of the Environment Department, you would think that if they were concerned about climate change, they would certainly rethink the way they've done this plan, because it seems to me that, they're talking about tourism, recreational fishing, nothing to do with food security for the population, but having thousands upon thousands of recreational boat that are not powered by oars, they are motored boats running around out there in the Great Sandy Marine Park, just so that those people can catch a feed for themselves. It seems, counterintuitive to a climate change plan that would be insisting on feeding the most people for the least impact. And that by taking away the public source of their locally caught seafood, that means then that we have to go down the road of increasing either farmed fishing or imports. Now, what's the footprint on imported seafood, when it has to come so far to Australia to feed our population? And I don't want to hit out at farmed produce, but there are issues in many cases with fish farms. One thing for a start is the amount of seafood that has to be caught to provide food for the fish, in the form of fish meal and so on as well. So and then there's the waste products and everything. When a fish is swimming wild, there's no build-up of their waste products, but in farms there is. And they have to work around that, of course, but it certainly seems to us that wild caught product is certainly by far the most environmentally sound option.
Two things to bring up for your comment, and these were in the consultation, Riz, and for those that are listening that want to have their say, you've got a chance to have your say. I think you'll have a couple of opinions here, Margaret. I want the listeners to hear what you've got to say. So the first one is around, what does DES or any conservation agency, including Grumpa along our coast, know about the cumulative impact of recreational on the marine environment? We know, and wait for it, everyone, absolutely nothing. There is tracking. There is no tracking of these vessels. There is very little tracking of the strikes of animals of conservation interest. There's very little understood, or more being understood, around the waste that comes from these boats. And to put a couple of things in perspective, if there is 940,000 recreational fishes across our Queensland coastline, and not an insignificant number, that a certain percentage will be in the DSMP. Let's say conservatively it's 30,000 in any given period of time in any month. Do we know how many of those vessels and impacts on the environment do we know on a daily, weekly, monthly, and yearly basis? And the answer to that, again, is very little. And the reason for that is politicians don't want to know. The public aren't clued into this because it's just a conversation that nobody wants to have. And I guess my question to you, Margaret, is what do you think, other than politics, is driving this kind of a response from the Minister for the Environment? How did we get here, is I guess what I'm asking you.
I would say most likely secret deals behind closed doors. Myself, that's how I see it. I believe that, they've certainly listened to certain individuals who have had a vendetta against the commercial sector, netters and trawlers in particular. And the thing that really upsets me about this issue, Eric, is these people make claims against the trawler operators and the net fishers, but they are never asked to produce the evidence of their claims. They never are. And we live in a world now where every man and his dog that goes out on the water has a little device called a mobile phone that has the capacity to take video footage and photographs clearer than a lot of cameras. And with all of that, as well as drones and Boating and Fisheries Patrol knowing where our fishermen are every 5 minutes of the day, they still have not been able to produce any credible, definite evidence of the claims they're making against us. I've been around long enough to remember what has gone on before. And back before the dugong protection areas were imposed, every dugong that was found dead along the coast in the Great Sandy Marine Park area was claimed to have been killed by net. And then after they got the dugong protection areas in, automatically, with no commercial fishermen fishing in the areas anymore, dugong deaths were all attributed to natural causes. Now, I find that highly suspicious. That's what happened then. And I don't think it's, you know, the attitude has changed. Dugongs will die of natural attrition. So will turtles. I mean, back in the day, and we had to call them out on it, certain individuals and organizations were actually publishing photographs of dead dugongs and dead turtles, claiming that they were caught in this area. But those photographs actually came off the internet and were from countries overseas. So, you know, with that sort of fraudulent behavior, you know, now that they're not doing it because they were called out on it, but, you know, that they're not able, well, they haven't produced any evidence to justify the claims that they're using for justification for the plan that they've got now and for these great big, you know, yellow zones, the increase in green zones. And the thing is too, Eric, we are being tracked every 5 minutes of the day. No recreational fisher is being tracked at all, let alone every five minutes. And, you know, they can have all the zones that they like, but how do they know that these people are not going to be fishing in those areas anyway? And you've got, in some cases, green zones surrounded by yellow zones. So it's making sure that they keep us out, but they're not making sure that they're keeping recreational fishers out. And, I mean, I believe that people should have the right to be able to go fishing for themselves anyway. Our industry has never called for recreational fishing to be banned, but that has not been the case coming from, you know, the other direction. It's certainly been those, you know, there's certainly those who act on a obvious hatred or vendetta against our industry and want it for themselves. And really, when it's all said and done, it'll be probably the 10% of the recreational anglers who are the most avid ones who'll have the whole resource to themselves, you know, and they're just taking it off the public and then expecting the public to get their seafood from overseas, from populations that could probably well use their own for themselves.
Thank you for sharing that. I think one of the key things that recreational fishers should be watching out for is once the hammers come down on us and they're the only game left in town, conservation groups will eventually come for them saying, oh, look at all these recreational fishers. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we could track where they fished? And wouldn't it be great if they were made to report what they're catching? And so I guess all the alliances that have come together to legislate the new zoning in this park, for those that are there that have been actively campaigning against us, I hope that that is an outcome that they live to see, because that's the way conservation groups work, and they will make friends with whoever they need to make whilst undermining us. It doesn't help that you've got local rabidly anti-commercial fishing interests in the region that have been actively advocating against us for what seems more than a decade. Other marine parks, and we could use the northern massive giant neighbour in the GBR, allows all forms of commercial fishing with certain restrictions. That zoning plan had funding in it to help people transition in a dignified way. Now, there were always fights about who got what amount of funding to be bought out, but that's typical for those processes. So I'm still wondering, and I'll wonder out loud until somebody gives me a response that I think is based in reality. If it's good enough in a World Heritage area to have multi-use commercial fishing as part of the ecosystem when I say ecosystem, I mean groups of individuals with different reasons for wanting to use the marine environment, that fishing is a legitimate form of it. Yet it seems we've taken some steps backwards in the planning of this marine park to exclude critically things like trawling in some areas or severely curtailing it, massive impacts on sand, blue swimmer crab, sand crab fishery in the GSMP, as well as commercial net fishing. And it's writ large in the consultation route if you go through it, what the position is. But it's funny, and we'll get to the next topic in one second, just so that I don't forget to say this or at least put it on the record. If anybody is reading that consultation, Riz, you would think that there is so much evidence to say we should be out that it's necessarily a done deal. And as an association, we haven't been sitting on our hands. We have data requests into the department saying on, and for those that are listening, go to page 67 and 68 around the claims of the protection of these poor species of conservation interests from the evil commercial fishermen in the region, and you know, to zone us out of existence based on very little information other than the precautionary principle to get us out before something goes wrong infantilizes what commercial fishermen do. They are professionals for a reason. Is that we fish to provide food for people to eat. We're not there spending discretionary money on a hobby to go out and recreationally fish where they're doing a job. And the fact that this hasn't been recognized puts a big cloud of doubt over the competency of the Minister for Fisheries, who should understand what our value is at beach price and beyond the supply chain for those businesses that rely on local seafood, to the Minister for the Environment that is only looking at the environmental benefits of the marine park, not the other uses, which include providing food for the community. And there's a degree of anger here, and there should be, because I think the public is being hoodwinked on this. Yes. And once we're gone, we are gone. Can we get a more sensible zoning plan that lets us all share the resource? Because if they're going to put it on net-free zone, and we need to see the money. We need to see the recreational fishing lobby put their hand in their pocket and compensate the people whose businesses are going to be written out of existence.
Yeah, Eric, there's a couple of issues there along this line. Years ago, the commercial fishing sector did courses in threatened and endangered species awareness to help us to learn, you know, how to handle a situation should one arise with one of these species. And so they did those courses. And as well as that, we also have an environmental management system in place as well that we've worked on for a number of years as well, because you know a lot of fishermen care very deeply about the environment. It's our workplace as well as the seafood provides us with our living when we catch it for the public, and you don't mess up your own nest, you know, so you're not going to ruin the very ecosystem that is providing you with the source of your income. And on that note, then it's sort of, I find it hypocritical to say that these zonings have been planned with, you know, the welfare of these animals in place, when we know for a fact that down near Tincan Bay, near the Ramsar wetlands area, there was some very strong herbicides being used in the forestry there that was able to be washed out to sea into the Ramsar wetlands. And, you know, what did the department do about that? You know, from reports I've heard, it was government departments that used those poisons. So, you know, and the implication there was that the herbicides would have poisoned the seagrasses that the dugongs and turtles need for their diet. And as well, that was followed up with seagrass degradation to a large extent. Now, what has the department done about that? You know, there's nothing in this plan. All they've done is drawn lines on maps and said who can go there and who can't. That's not going to keep herbicides out of the area to impact on seagrasses. And certainly up our area in the around the Burnett River here, we've had issues up here that commercial fishermen have been raising for many years as well, with regards to, you know, a padlocked shut fish ladder, and where, you know, most species have to be able to transit from seawater into brackish and then into freshwater. Well, with the Ben Anderson Barrage where it is, the fish have to navigate an area where there's so little brackish water, they have very little opportunity to assimilate ready to the change into the other, whether it be salt water or fresh water. And that's been a problem for many, many years and has impacted on the fishing in this region. But on top of that, now the plan under this Great Sandy Marine Park review, they're planning to have from the Burnett River south to Monrepeau made yellow zone, supposedly to protect turtles that we don't catch at all. But the interesting thing is that there's the sewerage treatment works just near the mouth of the river. And then at the other end, there's a sewerage outlet as well. So that's really interesting. And then there's this little section of dark blue along that coast there. And that dark blue, they'll say, oh, but you can go fishing there probably. And then because of they've left it dark blue, they'll probably say, well, you know, because you can go and put your net there, you won't qualify for any compensation. But that dark blue zone is an area where there's swimmers, there's surfers, there's surf skis, and it's not an area that we ever fish because of that other activity. We keep away from areas like that because we don't want to, you know, cause any problems for other sectors in the community. And but it is a concern of ours, certainly, that in spite of the fact that the minister is saying repeatedly that, you know, there's going to be compensation, we do believe that if we can deploy our fishing gear anywhere else along the coast, that there will not be a red cent of compensation to us. But we can deploy our gear in a bathtub too, but that's not going to give us any fish that we can, you know, provide for the public for food, and it's not going to provide us with a living. And, you know, there's more than one way to skin a cat, as they say. You can send the entire industry broke without having to close up the entire area to commercial fishing. All they have to do is take the productive areas from us and leave us too little area for us all to fish, and leave us in such a small area that we have to keep fishing it over and over and over again, which is not the way we fish. We fish, then we move to another area to give the area a rest. And but they can cause us to be fishing on top of each other so that none of us make enough for a living. I mean, we earn a living by catching seafood for the community. That is what we do. And that living is our profit after expenses from the sales of our product. Now, if they take off 30%, if they take off 50%, if they take off 80%, that is not going to provide enough for us to be able to pay those expenses, many of which are fixed and don't decrease according to the amount of fishing you do. Therefore, we will not have any living. We won't earn enough to be able to live. And the other thing is, if there's too few of us catching too little product for our onshore businesses to stay viable, then they will close down. And then what are we to do then? You know, we've lost all our support as well. So it's a downward spiral for the industry. But even if, I mean, if they do pay compensation to those of us affected, how are they going to compensate the population when they need, you know, the access to seafood? And we're living in a world now where we're hearing more and more about food insecurity. Why at a time like this would they be destroying more, you know, food production? It just doesn't make sense.
That last point is well made, that we have government agencies that don't seem to talk to each other to the degree that they necessarily should. And I can't disagree with anything that you've said. I think what I'd like to end the discussion on, and we will come back to you and a couple of others in the lead up to the 23rd of October, but let me put this to you in two parts, given your interest in this and your ongoing advocacy for local fishers and those well outside your area. One, what would you say to the Minister for the Environment if you had a few minutes to talk to her about what it is that you're seeing to maybe sway her thinking? And then number two, what are you seeing around from fishermen that you know about the coming impacts of the plan, or what people are seeing of it already?
Well, what I'd say to the Minister is don't fix what's not broken. You know, she's obviously been wined and dined by people telling her very negative impacts from our sector, while probably providing glowing reports of their own sector. And I would say to her, if you believe in the science, which it's, you know, it's the Department of Environment and Science, then I think she should be looking for the science. She should be looking for the evidence. She should be asking them for the evidence of their claims rather than just listening and believing everything that they're saying and going ahead with it. I mean, I heard that there was some recording of turtles that were impacted by boat strike in Victoria, and it was in an area, from what I believe, I think it was in an area where there was no commercial fishing anyway. So it was all recreational fishing vessel strikes. Now, if they have that and there's no impact, well, no credible evidence of impact from the commercial sector, why would they be increasing the very sector that evidently causing problems that has actually been recorded, you know? And but anyway, I would say to her definitely to ask for the evidence and make sure that it's not from overseas. Make sure that it is local evidence, and speak to the people that she's impacting. She has not, to my knowledge, I don't believe she has spoken to a single commercial fisher, and who's affected. And that seems to be a bit of a pattern with things like this.
So, Margaret, what are you seeing amongst commercial fishers that you're working with since the dropping of this plan at the 11th hour, so to speak?
They're feeling very much like this has been a done deal, that they don't feel that that there is anybody who's going to listen to them, or that if they say anything, nothing's going to make any difference. It's a dictatorial decision, not a democratic one. And there's a lot of fishermen very depressed and very little hope out there for anything positive on the horizon. And, you know, she can say in the document about paying compensation, well, that's an easy one to just throw out there for the public to say, but you guys are going to be compensated. But the reality might be entirely different, you know, and we believe it will be. We believe that if there's anywhere that we can go fishing still, regardless of how little it produces and how many of us there are to share the same area and how much impact it has on our businesses, we don't believe that there will be any real compensation. And in any case, a lot of these things, it's never enough. I mean, most of our fishermen are getting on in years, and you know, we were forced onto quotas by the fisheries reform, and some of us now hold quota that we can't use because it's in areas where we were kicked out of. And I believe that this very plan is likely to do have the same impact, so that we are going to be in a position where we have stranded asset that we cannot sell. Why would anyone want to buy our business or buy our gear if there's no opportunity to actually use it and make anything out of it? You know, you can't. And so by giving us 1 year's compensation, what's that supposed to do when most of us, our you know, our gear and our licenses and our quotas, they're our assets that we would have to normally sell to provide us with our retirement, but that's just not going to be available to us now.
Yeah, look, Margaret, thank you. I appreciate your time. We'll have to come back to you on this topic. I think there's more to discuss, and as an opening salvo, this is a good start for a discussion to get the public talking about where they're going to get their seafood if it's not from us. So for those listening, I've been speaking to Margaret Stevenson. Margaret, thank you.
You're welcome, Eric. I don't hold out much hope that anything will change. Like other fishers, I believe it's a done deal that we're just, that's going to be just railroaded through. But at least I can have a say.
There's always hope, mate. So thank you. Thank you again, Margaret. For those listening, this has been the QSIA podcast series. Thank you for joining us, and we'll catch you again on the next podcast.